okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 142 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, once again, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, mate, I'm pretty good. Pretty good, considering it's 10:30 at night and you and I are still in good spirits.
Yeah.
What was this line that you said to me earlier in the day about, hopefully I'll be sober by then? What's that all about?
You obviously didn't see my Facebook status.
Something about a bottle of Shiraz or something. I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Mate, I was cast adrift by my work colleagues. There were six of us on the table and no one was prepared to come to my aid and help me demolish a nice bottle of Penfold's 1998 Shiraz.
Oh, the mongrels. How could they do that to you?
Exactly.
Where's
the support when you need it, you know?
Ah, it's just shocking. Well, I would just move them from your circle of friends and say, how could you possibly be my friends and let me drink this bottle
that's
alone?
Exactly.
That's just
right.
Not right. That's not right. So are you sober?
I am.
You are?
Yes.
Because I certainly wouldn't be. I'm a one-pot screamer, as they say down under. You know, for the overseas contingent, a one-pot screamer, how would we define that, Bruce?
One glass and you're gone.
Yeah, one glass and you're anybody's. Yeah, yeah, that's right. So, a one-pot screamer, mate. I'm a one-pot screamer.
You're going to be good fun on Saturday the 2nd then?
So, yeah, absolutely. That's going to be heaps of fun on Saturday the 2nd.
Excellent. No, so it was our creative department Christmas lunch today.
Oh, right.
So the company was actually picking up the bill, so I didn't mind.
What the hell?
I didn't mind buying a $120 bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Even if I was going to be the only one drinking it.
Well, you know, hey, you know, it's a tough gig, but somebody's got to do it.
That's exactly right. So, what have you been up to lately?
Well, Matt, I spent the day with David Oakley, with Glenn Lavender, my partner in crime for Creative Photo Workshops, and David Oakley, who you mentioned last week as the designer of your website. Now, he had a few things to say about your website, and I thought he was right. So when he makes these suggestions, you've got to listen to him, Bruce.
Right. Why? Right. Has he made suggestions that I've not listened to?
No, I think he basically realizes them that he should have told you earlier, or that he didn't think about them then. But he wants to simplify your website a little and make
it
run a little bit faster. Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And this is the kind of guy he is. He is just, as we were saying before we recorded, just an awesome human being.
He is.
Love you, David. You're a great guy. Well, we talked to him today about creating or building our Creative Photo Workshops website.
Nice.
Which is up and running, you know, sometime in the near future, I'm sure. And so there's a lot happening on that front. The one thing that I've learned, and I've mentioned it many times here, is that there's a serious thirst for knowledge of, you know, about photography
and
the
world. What you're telling me is that he's used my website as a guinea pig to iron out all the bugs so he can do yours properly. Is that what you're telling me? Is that what you're telling me?
We sent him in there. That's right. Use you as an experiment. Our website is probably very different to yours, actually, but because yours is a photography website.
Sure.
Ours is
a tutorial site.
Well, it'll be about, you know, booking workshops and creating your own, and you know, who we are and what we do.
Yeah.
It won't have, you know, it won't have galleries of photographs to the degree that yours does. But he's just such a great guy. And again, if you need a website built for yourself as a photographer or any other business you have, David is just one of the best guys. You know, Rivid Studio.
Yeah.
That you could ever ask to do it for you. So I'll put in another plug for you, David, because you deserve it, mate.
Absolutely. Really, I've raved about David to anybody who will listen.
Mm-hmm.
And the work that he's done on my site, I'm very happy with it. So
well, I picked him up on Wednesday night. I had a swimsuit workshop to do.
I saw that.
Yeah, that was, look, it's a tough gig.
Another,
you know,
one of those tough gigs that you have to do. Yeah.
Look, if people need to learn, somebody has to step up. Somebody has to step up and help people learn these techniques.
Right. Yeah.
And I was prepared to hire the models, interview them, put them through the whole audition process. You know, it took me
beat them
ages.
All with an ugly stick.
Yeah, that's right. You know? and then go down and ask, you know, and then, you know, okay, girls, get your gear off. Let's take your pictures. You know, that was basically the nature of it. Somebody has to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I put my hand up and say, okay, and you swallow hard and you take a deep breath and you once more under the breach, dear friend.
Take another one for the team. Yeah.
That's it. Another one. That's it. And no, it was a really good workshop, but I picked David up to, you know, take him to the workshop because he's coming to our summer series.
Right.
And he thanked us profusely. So I passed that on to you, Bruce. He thanked us profusely for the mention that he got. He was telling everybody to listen to the podcast. So you're in it again, Dave. You're in it again. And I'm picking him up again in the morning. I have a workshop to run tomorrow morning all day at the Abbots. Picking him up to come again. He's a sucker for punishment, this bloke. He really is.
Obviously,
Great photographer and a great guy. But the interesting thing that, you know, we were talking about off air before we did the workshop was your concern for, I suppose a photographer who runs workshops, can he keep in touch with the real world? It's an interesting question, Bruce.
Yeah, just that, as I was saying to you before we started recording, it seems like, you know, Glenn has built up this, you know, runaway freight train in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking at your calendar for next year, you have got a massive commitment to CPW.
Yeah.
And my question is, you know, is there a potential to lose contact with being in the real world and the working world if you are continually running workshops and that, you know, you're going to have to give up on the commercial work? You know, I know that one of the things with the training stuff, you know, the stuff I did with TAFE and the stuff I do with Adobe, you know, the thing that those guys love about using me as an audio teacher is the fact that I work in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of that, I guess it's a balancing act of, you know, keeping enough of that commercial work going so that you can still say, yes, I work in the industry. I guess it could be easy to let the whole tutorial teaching aspect run away with, you know, all of your time.
And what do they say about teachers? You know, those who can't do teach.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that in this particular case because I've been doing for, you know, a long time, 20 odd years, but I love to teach and I love the rewards of it. You're very right though. You know, in that if you're doing too much teaching and you're not in the real world, you're not going to be able to keep up. And that's why I've said, you know, to you just before and on this podcast, what I'd really love to do is go to other photographers' workshops, which, you know, I will be doing because I want to learn from them myself.
Yeah.
But I still have commercial clients that I will keep working for. I have the ANZ Bank that I do a fair bit of work for. Kodak Australia, I do a fair bit of work for, among others. So, you know, I will be, you know, doing a fair bit with them. And I keep in touch with the photographic industry who gets me to do things from time to time. But I, you're right. I have to be very, very careful because you can often, just like as a photographer can get into a rut if he does the same thing over and over and over again. If you're running workshops, you can also get into a rut by doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, Glenn and I are varying our workshops and we already have, you know, a fair few that we do. But also I will definitely be keeping my hand in both in the domestic and in the commercial aspects of photography. Otherwise, I'll lose my edge, you know, as a photographer, and I can't afford to do that. I don't want to do that. So you're right. Glenn has taken this. He's such a smart guy. I tell you what.
Yeah.
And he knows exactly how to make something happen. And all you have to do is suggest it to him, and he makes it come about. I was saying to him the other day, you know what? I'd love to do, Glenn. I'd love to photograph a wedding in Tuscany. And he said, okay, we'll make it happen. 2011, we'll be in Tuscany.
Wow.
We'll make it happen. So, because we have no time left in 2010. So, you know, and this is the kind of guy he is. We got a call from, or a contact from Nevin. Thank you, Nevin, by the way. I really hope this happens. But Nevin is a Shutters Inc. listener.
Right.
Relative newcomer to Shutters Inc. And he contacted us and said, what about workshops in Croatia? And he's deadly serious, and it can happen, and it probably will happen. Sometime very, you know, in the first quarter of, or at least the first half of 2010.
Right.
So, you know, I am constantly amazed by the thirst for knowledge that is out there for photography, and I think it's just a fabulous thing. I don't think it can be, you know, understated just how fabulous that is, not just because I get to do it, but that it's great that people really want to learn and take their, you know, their craft further.
Yeah.
We're happy to do it.
Awesome.
You know, we're really, really happy to do it. An interesting thing happened, and I was thinking about it after we recorded the podcast last week.
Right.
That I wanted to bring up that I have recently, realized, as a result of running this particular workshop, but I've seen it happen before. Many of the workshops...
Sorry, when you say this particular workshop, which workshop are you referring to?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Well, it is 10:45, so, you know, I need another cup of coffee. But the recent workshops that we ran in Brisbane.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Hello to all the listeners up there who attended. You guys are fabulous. Hope to come up again soon. It was a very interesting. We were in a few circumstances where I set up lighting circumstances, lighting situations. And as you do, and because I love it so much, you would set up a rim lighting situation.
Yep.
There's one situation I set up the bride to be rim lit by a door that opened into the church that we were in. And so I had the bride, Kylie, standing there and light coming through the door into the dark church, and she was naturally rim lit. And the metering had to be very carefully done so that you didn't, overexpose too much, but also not underexpose too much, so that you had enough detail in the bride's face to get an idea of who she was and what she looked like, but also not too much so that the whole thing looked ridiculously blown out. Yet even with that careful metering done, a lot of the a lot of the people on the workshop came up to me and they would show me the photograph on the back of their camera. And it was beautiful. It was just a beautiful photograph. We had a church that they had allowed us to use for the workshop, and we really appreciated that. And this photograph was absolutely gorgeous. If I set it up and I did take the first one, but on a workshop, I never get to tweak my pictures. I never get to perfect them. You know, I take the picture, I know that it's working, and then I hand it over to everybody else to do. That's the way we run workshops, because we believe that you learn by doing, not by watching some other photographer and following him around, which apparently a lot of workshops do. So I'd hand it over, and they'd come back and they'd say, oh, look at this. But they'd have the little blinking highlights going on the back of their camera. And so here's this rim-lit bride with the rim of her dress and her veil and everything, you know, blinking in the photograph. And they'd walk over to you with this look of disappointment on their face. And I'd say, what the, you know, and they'd say, oh, look. And they'd show me this beautiful photograph on the back of their camera screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, what's the matter? And they said, oh, I've blown it out.
I can see where this is going.
Yep. Can you?
I'm guessing. I'm guessing that I can see where this is going.
I've blown it out, they'd say. And I said, well, hang on. It's white. Yeah, but look, there's even a bit of detail here, and I've blown it out. And I'd look at them and say, look, do you like the photograph? Oh, yeah, I love this photograph. Oh, you're proud of it? Yeah. But, you know, I've blown out the highlights. And I said, are you a member of a camera club? And she said, yes. And I said, and there you have it. This is camera club judgment mentality. And I know there's many out there who belong to camera clubs, and there are probably many listeners of this podcast who are judges. Hello, Graham Anderson, right? Hello, Graham. I know you're listening. You're not like this, though, Graham. I know. But they allowed a rim of white, you know, of whiteness, let's put it that way, to remove all the joy of creating that image.
Right.
To the point where, even though it was a beautiful image, it took away all the joy of having created it in the first place. And I thought that was really, really sad, because it there's this mentality, especially among people who judge photographs, that something like that is just purely unacceptable. I have no problem with a burnt out highlight. If something's white, it's white. If I had to burn something out, if I have to sacrifice something to get something else, and that is the limitation of the camera sensor, if that's the limitation of the media generally that I'm using, the medium, then I have no problem with that. And in fact, I really don't have a problem with blowing something out. Sometimes it really looks good.
Yeah.
But, you know, white is white, for Pete's sake. You know, it's gonna flash. If it's pure white, it's going to flash in on your screen. Yeah. But even if you could have had a little bit of detail in the dress or the veil, at what cost?
Yeah.
There'd be a lot of people who'd argue this point that you could get into the RAW file and you could, you know, sort it all out. And you probably could. I've no doubt you could. But the JPEG that the camera's produced is probably better than anything you would have produced, perhaps, you know, in film many years ago.
You reckon?
Well, yeah. Depending, of course, on what kind of film you're using, and we're talking about how well the image is metered. You know, even negative film, with all its dynamic range, would still blow things out. You know, you would have that black patch in the negative that would be white in the print, and there was no detail there, depending on how you metered for it.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you would deliberately meter to blow stuff out.
Yeah.
Are we getting a little, you know, and I'll put this out
too
there.
Precious?
Are we getting a little, are we getting too precious? You know, allow the picture to give you the joy of its creation. You know, let it be what it is. And the photograph was beautifully composed, beautifully lit. It had a beautiful emotional quality to it. Allow that to give you joy. And then if you really, really want to get, you know, precious about it, well, yeah, open up. If that picture means so much to you, open up the RAW file and spend a half an hour fixing it all, you know?
Yeah.
At that very moment, don't, you know, let it ruin all that you've put into it. I felt sorry for them because it happened a few times over those 4 days. And every time I thought, you've just allowed this to kill the whole joy of creating that image. Because it was a beautiful image, Bruce.
Yeah, right.
You know? And it happened many, many times. And I thought, well, you know, if you are listening, Brisbaneites and anybody else, remember this point, because and it's happened on other workshops as well, but it suddenly struck me as to why people were thinking that way when I was standing there in this church in Brisbane. You know, never let the joy of what we're doing be overwhelmed by precious technicalities. That to me just doesn't make any sense at all. And everything has a limitation, you know? Every technology has a limitation. You'd know, I suppose, that as an audio engineer.
Absolutely.
Dynamic range in audio.
Yep.
Something's going to suffer.
Yep.
Sooner or later. So does that mean that you can't enjoy the song? You know?
Well, it's funny because the hardcore audio engineers are, right as we speak, bemoaning the fact that while cinema is moving to higher and higher resolutions for distribution of visual content, you know, in terms of we went from VHS to DVD and from DVD to Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now in, you know, Hollywood, they're shooting on these 4K cameras and the resolution's getting better and better. In the audio world, the marketing guys have done a great job of pulling the wool over the ears of the audience, if you will, rather than the eyes of the audience. And we've actually regressed in what is now considered the norm for music distribution. You know, we've
Really?
Well, think about it. We've gone from 44.1K 16-bit stereo CD,
which was
lossless, back to, you know, 128 kilobit MP3, which the unwashed masses will tell you is CD quality, and it's not even close to CD quality.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's easy to distribute and it makes for small files, you know, the whole marketplace has changed. And, you know, the audio engineers who take great pride in their work are going, but, you know, we should be stepping the bar up. We should be going up to, you know, 96K as a distribution sampling rate, you know, or even 192K as a distribution sample rate, rather than going backwards. But, you know, that's just the way it is. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's fair enough. My only thought would be, you know, in the what's the word? In the context of this discussion,
yep.
It's still, you know, I've got MP3s at 128. I prefer them at 320, but
so do I. Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, at 128, I've got some there at 128. Right? It doesn't mean that I can't enjoy the song.
Exactly.
And if it was a song that I'd recorded and someone played it back to me, and, you know, as an MP3 at 128, I'd written it, I'd arranged it, you know, I'd recorded it even, and it was played to me at 128, I wouldn't let the fact that it's 128, you know, whatever. What's the
kilobits?
Kilobits, yes. Mm-hmm. Ruin the fact that I really love this song that I've just written and recorded.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And in photography, we're letting ourselves do that because photography has become so technological.
Mm-hmm.
The technology of it, and the technology is greater now than it was before, I think, in many ways, because before it was analog and chemical, and now it's all digital.
Yep.
And there's so many technologies related to photography now that didn't exist not even 10 years ago, not even 5 years ago in many cases, that we're starting to think in these really anal terms and forgetting that we're creating an image.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, we don't want to go on about this too long, and this will probably be a relatively short podcast because your wife was giving me stick before about the fact that we're recording it so late. Hi, Kathy, by the way. I suppose if we were to just say one final thing for the end of the year, if I was to leave any point that I wanted to make, and it would be that in all the discussions we have, the one thing that we've always talked about on this podcast has been the joy of the creation of the image, and more about we've had more about creative content and actually achieving the image than we've ever done, too much that I recall, about technicalities. A, because I'm not particularly technical as a person, and B, that's not why I take photographs. I don't take photographs so I can get into it technically.
Yep.
I take photographs because it does something inside my heart.
Sure.
You know?
Yep.
It makes me feel good. It makes me feel creative. It fills a creative need in me. The moment we start worrying about little flashing black things on the back of our screen, we're losing the whole reason that we entered into it. By all means, concern yourself with the details. By all means, be technical, yes, and so that you can really improve your image, but not at the cost of the joy of that moment.
Mm.
You know?
I think there's an aspect to that anecdote which you've just told, which I feel you haven't spoken about, and that is that in this instance, you are talking about the face of a bride as the central or key element of the composition of that image.
Mm.
And
not really. No, not really.
No?
I'll let you continue, but...
Well, I was going to say that, you know, at the end of the day, that's the key part of that entire image that you want to get across, because that's the human element of the image.
That's true. Yep.
And that's the bit that's going to create the emotional response, you know, in relation to all of the other compositional elements of that image.
Mm.
So that face is the bit that needs to be, you know, at least visible and exposed well. And, you know, the rim lighting, you know, assuming you've set your subject up, you know, properly, it's not going to be the face that's going to be blown out, I would imagine. I mean, I haven't seen the image, but I'm just guessing.
No.
You're talking about all of the stuff around the rim, and therefore, you know, are you getting hung up on the bits that aren't the most important part of the image?
Yeah, you make a valid point. The image was metered in such a way that, yes, you're right. We shouldn't worry about the white bits around the edge because they're not that important. You're right. The face is more important. But in the metering of it, I found a balance between the two.
Yeah.
You see, the light was coming in very brightly. This is Brisbane, so it's about 11:30 in the morning by the time we're photographing this.
Right.
The sun's really high. The sky is really blue. There's hard light pouring in through this door. And so the rim lighting was pretty heavy, right? And, of course, there's not much light reflecting back because we're inside a church.
Yep.
We weren't using reflectors, nothing like that. Just the shot as it was.
Yep.
Now, you're right. The bride's face is very important, and Kylie had a very pretty face, and so that even added to the need to see it to some degree. However, I argued with them on this point, you know, to the degree that, look, this is a wedding photograph. It's a wedding shoot. And that being the case, the bride already knows who she is, and everybody looking at the album or the photographs in the context of this wedding shoot knows who she is.
Yep.
So the face is not as important in terms of, for two reasons. We already know who the bride is because there's 200 other photographs that, you know, are saying, hello, this is Kylie's wedding. And secondly, it's a photograph that is contextual in terms of its light and in terms of its location. Yep. So it wasn't necessarily about the bride's face. It was about the entire thing.
Right.
So for me, it didn't matter that her face showed every detail. It was metered to the degree whereby you could see her face, but it wasn't spot metered for the face, if right. you know what I mean.
Yes, yeah.
If that had been the case, everything would have blown out. You would have seen no detail of the inside of the church, and you know it would have looked ridiculous. Unless, of course, that's the effect that you were after. But the balance that we found was the best balance for the nature of that photograph. So again, I felt that we were getting a little too carried away in our desire for what that image was supposed to be, do, and portray. Are we again thinking too technically? Oh, I haven't metered for the bride's face. Well, that's okay. Doesn't really matter. There's 200 other photographs that tell us who she is, like I said.
Yeah.
But the other thing, even if it was a standalone photograph, there was enough light to see a pretty face, but, you know, not necessarily all the details of it. But it wasn't the shot was about a rim-lit bride. Right. Even if it was standalone, it was a shot of a rim-lit bride. So, you know, again, are we asking too much of the technology? I don't know. But also, are we just trying to say too many things and getting really disappointed when not all of those things that we think we're trying to say are actually being said? You know, what do you have to achieve with that image? Well, the image itself was standalone, a beautiful rim-lit bride, you know, nicely posed, nicely established, find the light, put them in it, there she is, bang. And it was just a beautiful standalone photo. I just felt that, as I've said already, that was getting lost completely in all the, what were we calling them, hard and soft? You know, the soft was getting lost right. in the hard,
yep.
you know? And it's funny that one of the gentlemen up there on the Brisbane workshops was, you know, familiar with the podcast. And when we were talking about photography, he said that's the thing that he's got to learn, and that is, you know, the soft instead of, you know, getting carried away with the hard.
Right.
It's that I think we'll be talking about this for a long time to come, Bruce. I really do, because there's either two kind in the workshops that I've run. I've found that there's often been two extremes. There's the really technical photographer who'll turn up at a workshop and he'll say, oh, but Shelton, what about this? And what about that? And what about this? Mm-hmm. And get really anal about, you know, the fact that I've put the bride or the model in some ridiculous situation and, you know, the background has fallen off because I've spot metered for the light on her face or whatever, right?
Yep.
They get really carried away by forgetting what we're trying to create here in terms of an image. They get carried away technically with details in the shadows, details in the highlights. And then there's the other extreme where people have absolutely no technical understanding at all and don't know, wouldn't know if the highlights were burnt out or wouldn't know if there was no shadow detail. So the knowledge balance is, I think, in understanding what is possible, what should and shouldn't be, what, you know, what details in highlights are, what details in shadows are, and then making an informed and educated decision on which one of them, you know, you want to throw away or whether they matter or not. If they matter, they matter. But if they don't, they don't. And I think that is where the hard and the soft come together in a beautiful creative balance that says, well, the image is more important. If I have to sacrifice this, I will, because you know what? Who gives a damn? Who cares? People are just going to look at the picture anyway, you know? Yeah. They're not going to – I think it would be ridiculous for a photographer to look at a beautiful photograph like this one that, you know, that they were pulling out of their cameras in this church, and it really was quite beautiful, and say, oh, you burnt out the highlights. You know, well, you know, that's ridiculous. either you enjoy it as it all comes together as greater than the sum of its parts, or you start picking on stupid little technical things. And then what's the point of even looking at photographs? What's the point of even taking photographs if that's all we're ever going to do? By all means, be understand them, be informed, be as educated as you possibly can be about all the technical aspects of photography if you want to, but don't let them get in the way of the very reason you wanted to buy a camera and get out and take pictures in the first place, and that is to create images. And don't let it deprive you of the joy of it. It happens far too often, and I'm sick of it, and I'm going to make it stop in the world. That's my mission. It's going to stop in the world.
Good for
you. I'm going to speak to every judge in camera clubs and say, what the hell are you doing? Making all these people depressed about stuff that they shouldn't overly worry about. Because it's, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Sorry, am I getting carried away?
No, not at all.
Okay, good. Maybe I need a whiskey. But you know what I'm saying, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I would love to get people, you know, I would love to get feedback on this point.
On one hand, I think your stance on this has the benefit of, you know, 2 decades of doing this. And I think, you know, to the newbie or, you know, even, you know, the person like myself who's done it as a hobby for 20 years but is only now, you know, turning around and going, okay, this is going to be my career now. It's not quite as easy to come to that decision, I guess, when it comes to the moment of capture of which way am I going to expose this?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I'm only speaking for myself here, but I kind of think, you know, based on something you were saying 5 minutes ago, and just as you were saying it, I was thinking, yeah, well, you've been doing it for so long, it's easy for you to think like that. But for me, it's a little bit harder.
I suppose that's why I'm doing this podcast.
Yeah.
That's not an ego trip. I'm just saying it's because I've been thinking about this for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, but not, I suppose, consciously thinking of it. It spins around in the back of my head when I take a photograph, but I don't necessarily consciously worry. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. I don't consciously worry if, for the sake of an image, I lose a little bit of detail in the shadow.
Did I mention on this podcast in the last 3 or 4 episodes the concept of the 10,000 hours?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we have mentioned it.
Yeah. And I think that's where it comes from, you know, is you've done those 10,000 hours and you've got to the point where it no longer requires, you know, front of mind conscious thinking to get the job done because it is so ingrained, you know, the neural pathways have been set up that it you just fly. I'm not suggesting that you shoot on autopilot, but you know what I mean? Like those decisions just happen spontaneously.
Yep. Yeah, it's true. It's like driving. You know, you go through.
Yeah.
You're driving and you go through an intersection, and later on you say to yourself, "Was that light green?" You know, and it was green.
Yep.
You didn't have to think about it at the time. Yep. I wouldn't say I'm there because I think the moment that I get to that point will, you know, would be the point where you'd actually stop enjoying the creative process. But I make those decisions very, very quickly.
Yep.
You know, shutter speeds, apertures, which the combinations of them, where what I'm going to expose for, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes, of course, or many times, you really got to work through an image because you might think it should be handled this way, and then you realize, no, that didn't actually work. I've got to handle it this way. I don't mind. Even that will even happen to me while I'm teaching a workshop, and I don't mind that at all because the process that I'm going through is the process everybody else would have to go through anyway. So watching me make a mistake and then work it back to create the image, I think, is a benefit to people who come along. But the decision that you're talking about, is far more, I suppose, automated than the neophyte photographer. But by the same token, I am not a person who's about technicalities. Like I suppose getting back to you, I can hear, if something was recorded in, you know, 1964, I can hear tape hiss. I really can.
Yep.
But I'm not going to let it get in the way of the fact that this is a really awesome piece of music. You know, I was listening to, you know, the music from The Shawshank Redemption.
I know the movie, but I can't say I'm intimately familiar with the soundtrack.
There's a scene in The Shawshank Redemption where Dufresne locks himself in the warden's office, and he plays this operatic piece over the loudspeakers.
Ah, yes.
Right. So I Googled that piece, and then I bought the music, and it's a recording by Maria Callas.
Okay.
Of sort of a Puccini aria, I think.
Right.
And I love it. I absolutely love it. And so I've got this, and I can hear. I mean, it's Maria Callas has been around a long time. So this is, you know, this was a recording from the 60s, and you can hear obvious tape hiss and, you know, not quite the detail you would hear in a modern recording of that opera piece, that aria.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't let it get in the way of the fact that Maria Callas had one of the most God-given voices ever in a woman.
Right.
And that the piece of music is divine, you know. If I were to concentrate on the fact that this thing's going in the background just lightly, I it would really bother me.
Thing is, it would actually take quite an effort to focus on that, because the human brain and the auditory system is very good at filtering out noises which are constant.
Yep.
That's why people who work on construction sites are, you know, reminded to wear hearing protection, because when you're listening to the same repetitive noise, you know, for 8 hours a day, your brain tunes it out, but it'll still cause hearing damage.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing with the tape hiss is because it doesn't shift in any, you know, in either frequency or amplitude, it's just a constant, your brain actually filters it out. And, you know, you might notice it for the first 20 seconds, but after that, I guarantee you've filtered that out and you're just concentrating on the music most of the time.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely true. I find now I've got an iPhone. I've got one of those little FM transmitters for my car.
Yep.
Right, that comes out of the lighter, and you just, you know, you tune your iPhone into your radio and you can play all your own music. Well, I've got that now, but of course it does get FM hiss, right?
Yep.
Static and stuff like that. But, you know, if it's relatively constant, I'll, you know, you don't listen to it.
Yeah.
And I suppose we should maybe apply that in photography. But you know, the kind of if I was to take that analogy of the tape hiss from this beautiful recording by Maria Callas, and I was to apply it into photography, I'd tell you now, and I'd put money on it, that there would be judges who would mark that piece of music down and Maria Callas's voice based on the fact that there was tape hiss.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they won't look at the song and they won't look at the creation that comes together and say, that's fantastic, that's beautiful. They would say, oh, it's got a bit of tape hiss. And I can't handle that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
And in photography, you know, there are, as with, look, digital recording has its limitations. Digital photography has its limitations. There are, you know, Lenny Kravitz went and bought the Abbey Road Studios, etc., because he liked the whole analog sound.
Yep.
Right? He bought all the technology from it, if I remember correctly.
Right.
But because he liked that sound. And then there'd be others who'd say, oh, no, we record digitally. It's so much better. But I imagine that analog has its advantages and digital has its advantages.
Yes.
But it doesn't change the fact that, you know, when Boston recorded More Than a Feeling in 1976, they were creating a masterpiece of music. I think it's a masterpiece. Anyway, but was recorded. It is. It's awesome. I, you know, you pull that song apart and it's absolutely awesome.
Okay.
You know, I could listen. If I had to be on a deserted island and I could take one piece of music with me, that would be a serious contender for the piece of music I'd take with me.
Okay.
But it was recorded in 1976.
Yep.
Great sound recording, but is it as good as today? Does it have some tape hiss? Yeah. Who gives a damn? This is a masterpiece of songwriting, of guitar skills. The vocals are amazing, right? Mm-hmm. I would concentrate on that. Not only the vocals are amazing, but the way that he segues from vocal into a guitar lead break seamlessly is awesome. Now, I can go on about that, right?
Yep.
Or I can say, oh, yeah, but if you listen carefully, it's got a bit of tape hiss.
Yeah.
You know? And in photography, I don't want the people who come to my workshops to make that their concern. Naturally, there's balance to be found in all things. But don't let the hard get in the way of the joy of the soft.
Yep.
I'm referring back to, of course, a few podcasts ago where the soft referred to our creative input, and the hard referred to our technical and technological input into the creation of an image. Once you do that, you're just going to throw your camera away because it'll never be good enough. Nothing will ever be good enough. And the better we get, the more we seem to want.
Well, hey, that's why I put the brakes on going out and buying the Alpha 850.
Right.
You know, it's just that whole thing that, you know, I thought I was going to be getting a camera which would absolutely eat my 7D for breakfast, and, you know.
It doesn't.
It didn't, no.
No, it doesn't.
Now, admittedly, I haven't, you know, gone and hired one for a weekend and really put it through, you know, the other challenging environments that you suggested that I should do. And I will do that after the new year. You know, because obviously I only, you know, got a couple of shots and they were all in store where the lighting was not particularly, you know, extreme. But yeah, so yeah.
Well, I think that you've made the right choice. And, you know, sooner or later, we'll get you over from, you know, we'll get you into you know, a better line of camera systems anyway. But no, I'm only kidding. No, you stick with what you've got. And I think you found that balance because it didn't make all that much difference.
No.
And, you know, you're about creating the image anyway. And I look at the work on your website, mate, and I think, wow, you know, you've got some beautiful stuff there.
Well, thank you.
Gorgeous, gorgeous work, you know, and good on you, mate. That, hats off to you. Take that ball and run with it. But, you know, don't, and I know that you're not the kind to get carried away, but don't ever, if you want my humble opinion, get too carried away with, you know, those technical things. I know as an audio engineer, you have to concern yourself with those technicalities because you're not the musician.
Yeah.
You're not in the studio. You're not the songwriter. You're not the singer. You're not the lead violin. You're not, you know,
no.
Your job is to concern yourself with the technical production of an artistic piece of music, say, or a narrative or whatever it might be. You're not the artist. You're the person, you know, recording that art.
Yeah.
As a photographer, we're a little bit of both. You know, we are the artist.
Yeah.
We are the artist, but we are also the person recording it.
The technician, yeah.
Exactly. The technician. We are both. You know, which would be the same in your case of being, you know, I suppose the person at the booth, at the desk, and the person in the studio with a microphone. As photographers, that's what we are, and find that balance between writing the song and recording it. Don't let one make the other suffer, and whatever you do, enjoy the whole process.
Yeah.
That's, you know, hell, I hate to say this out loud, I hate to say this publicly, but it's only photography. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's there to do one thing: make us feel good, make other people feel good, capture the world, capture beauty, capture, you know, it's only photography.
It's only rock
Let
and
it
roll,
be.
But I like it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It's only rock and roll, but I like it. Three chords and, you know, and away you go. And that is, it's only photography. You enjoy it. Don't be anal about it. And, you know, and it will mean so much more to you. If I was going to close the year off with anything, which I suppose we're about to do, that would be it. You know, and if you're going to be taking pictures over the next few weeks until we return, you know, oh, enjoy it, man. Oh, just enjoy.
I will be. New Caledonia and Vanuatu, here we come.
Oh, yeah. And we are going to see some photographs, I presume, won't we, Bruce?
Count on it.
Ah, beautiful.
You can count on it.
Oh, beautiful. Fantastic.
So, as one of the girls at work today said to me, she said, oh, you'll come back with some more panoramas for next year's calendar. I said, I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely. So you should.
Yeah.
Well, you have a great time, mate.
I will.
And I, you know, I wish every one of our listeners a fabulous time over the next few weeks with their family and friends.
Yep.
Make sure you stay safe and make sure that you come back to listen next year healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I guess that pretty much wraps it up for another year. I would like to take this opportunity to say thank you to all of those people who have supported us through this year. And, you know, just hung in there, despite the sometimes extended breaks in the recording schedule, and have, you know, kept us, or kept hounding us, I guess, with emails and Facebook messages, you know, saying, when's the next episode going to be out? It's been great to have that support.
Yeah.
And
it's nice to be wanted, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great to have built up the, you know, I'd go so far as to say the friendships that I have with, you know, some of our audience, you know, some of whom I've met, the Melbourne crowd I've met, and, and, you know, some of the American, you know, well, the majority of the American listeners I have not met. I've only met one or two of them. But you know, conversations on Facebook, and yeah, it's just, it's fantastic. So
it's a wonderful way to build a network that, you know, you come to count on in many ways for your daily supply. I suppose, you know, and it really is lovely. I mean, we started this podcast a few years ago with no great intention, but it really has become something I never expected it to be.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I'm very, very grateful for all your listenership, all of your patience with us, and the mere fact that you're interested and want to connect with us, even as we enjoy connecting with you. So thank you again. I am with Bruce 100% on this. Thank you very much for listening, but more importantly, you know, wanting to listen and wanting to be a part. We really do appreciate that.
Yep, absolutely. All right, people, have a Merry Christmas if that is your thing, and a safe and happy New Year, and we will talk with you again in 2010.
Yeah, 2010, man.
You know what spins me out? Is how the whole lead up to the Y2K bug took years and years and years, and it was like the end of the world kind of thing, and it's already a decade behind us.
Yeah, that's true.
That just blows my mind.
Yeah, but we are approaching 2012, you know, and according to the Mayan, we're all done for.
If you believe that, yeah.
If you believe that. We'll wait and see, shall we?
Yeah.
I walked into McDonald's the other night. I was with Nathan, and we just walked in, and I don't know, we were making some joke about the end of the world or something, you know, and this freaky guy comes up to me, and he goes, you want to know about the end of the world? 2012, man, 2012. And then he just left. And he was, you know, his eyes were wild, you know. And I'm thinking, oh, boy. He really believes it.
Yeah.
So, you know, no wonder he's in McDonald's. He probably wants to die early or something. Yeah. But we shall see. We shall see.
Yeah. I take it you have read up on why the Mayans thought this?
It has something to do with a 26,000-year calendar, am I correct?
Exactly.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
The massive calendar that they had was broken down into ages. And I think each age is like 2,600 years.
Yes.
And 2012 marks, you know, as near as we can gather, the end of one age and the beginning of the next age.
Mm.
I can't remember.
Isn't it the age of Aquarius?
Yeah, I think that is the age that will begin with 2012.
Uh-huh.
And so
this is the dawning of the age.
Oh, God, I knew you'd do that.
Age of Aquarius.
Yeah, and so their thinking was that, you know, it was the end of an age, not necessarily the end of the world or life as we know it, which, you know, people seem to be jumping on that bandwagon, and, you know, you've got this absolutely horrid B-grade, you know, blockbuster movie that's, you know, just adding fuel to the fire. So
I haven't seen it yet.
Have I, but every report I have read has absolutely canned it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I reckon it's crap.
Oh, Nathan and I are going to go see it on Monday night. So.
All right, well, you can give us a report next year.
Will do. Have a great time on your cruise, buddy, all right?
I will, and you have a good break over the next couple of weeks. Try and get some downtime.
I need some downtime, absolutely. I love what I do, but I love not doing it too sometimes.
And I will see you in Melbourne, because that'll probably be the next time I talk to you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, when are you in Melbourne?
Hi, Bruce.
When am I in Melbourne? Oh. Hello?
Oh, of course. Yeah. On the second. Yeah, okay. Hey, it's 11:20 p.m., man. Give me a break. You know, and I've just had Nathan, you know, jump into the office and,
yeah,
and
tell him I said g'day.
Everybody says g'day, nay. Oh, everybody.
Yeah, Bruce. So I will probably not speak to you again before I get to Melbourne. I may ring you the day before or something like that. But so
we'll catch up. We'll have some fun.
Absolutely.
Have a good time, mate.
You too, mate. I'll talk to you then.
Yeah, for sure.
See ya.
See you, everybody.
This has been another AudioToYou.com podcast. For previous episodes, check out
ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
Please send questions, comments, or feedback to studio@AudioToYou.com.